RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Cindy De Villiers and Alison Goodwin from NZD SOS join us now. Hello, you two. Nice to have you back.
Hi, Paul. Thank you.
Hi, Paul. And hello, listeners.
What the government has done in the last week, what do you make of that? Installing a commissioner, Levy. He's a doctor, right?
Well, yes, I think so. I think he's done medical training. I'm not clear when he last worked clinically. Mm-hmm. But yes, I mean, it does. Well, maybe it does need something drastic. I mean, it sounds pretty drastic. It sounds like it's. I don't feel like I've got a really clear understanding of why people have been leaving, why the sudden exodus of people from the Ministry of Health. That hasn't been explained clearly. We haven't heard. Well, as far as I've seen, we haven't heard directly from any of the people that have left. They're all just sort of saying, oh, my term was up, or I couldn't actually do what I wanted to do.
I think Shane Retty, I'm not sure if this is a quote, but I think it's pretty well what he meant, indicated that there's been a lack of an operating framework to health. That doesn't happen instantaneously, does it?
I agree with Alison. It's been a long time coming, and I think the whole operating framework is probably what needs to be looked at, because it is very much a reactive pharmaceutical type model. And you know, even though the GPs are following the guidelines and following the framework that they've been given, it appears that more and more patients are ending up in hospital or in ED. So it's clearly not working. So we really have to look at the whole medical system and where we're putting our efforts. And do we need to be putting our efforts purely, maybe not purely, but largely in the pharmaceutical interventionist range, or should we be looking at how we can actually prevent people from ending up in hospital?
Yeah, okay. What about the bureaucracy behind health? I understand that, I think the Prime Minister mentioned the 14 layers of management in there. I mean, it's like peeling back an onion, isn't it, in the end?
Well, that's right. And no one can make a decision because they've got to go, oh, I can't decide that. I mean, when you read the OIA responses and how long they take to get an answer, you ask a simple question and it's got to go through a whole process and then potentially be answered by a lawyer or some legal person at the other end, whereas, nobody can take responsibility. It just seems like we are mired in bureaucracy, and I'd agree that a lot of that needs to go. I mean, my mother was an anaesthetist in Northland in the 1970s and maybe 80s, I can't remember exactly. But, there was a medical superintendent in the hospital. There weren't layers and layers of bureaucracy. There were the surgeons and there were anaesthetists, and they got on and did the job, and nobody was sort of bean counting and doing this and that. They just got on and did their job. And now you've got, yes, all these people sort of ticking, yes, you've got to tick these boxes, you've got to do that. I mean, so much of a GP's time is doing all this box ticking, screening. Have you got your cardiovascular risk done? How many people have had mammograms? How many people have had cervical smears? Just all these things that, I mean, the patient may or may not be interested in, but, that's where your funding comes from. If you've got whatever percentage of your patient with a cardiovascular risk done, or if you've got however many percent of your children immunised, so there's a lot of effort and time spent chasing up those box-ticking things rather than spending the time actually with the individual patients.
So none of that is really necessary, is that what you're saying?
Well, I mean, I think that's a discussion that should be had. How necessary is it? There are ups and downs to screening of any sort. That is a whole other conversation, though. The pluses and minuses of screening.
Yeah.
I think, again, it's the framework, and the framework is an interventionist framework. So, yes, we are trying to prevent cervical cancer and we are trying to prevent breast cancer. But should we not also be looking at, is there maybe a common denominator for all for most health problems? So should we not be looking at lifestyle? Should we not be teaching GPs this, which would prevent breast cancer?
Well, yes, and prevent cervical cancer.
And prevent people rocking up at ED.
Fancy that.
I mean, I've been a GP for, 20 years, and I have just seen this huge increase in bureaucracy and layers of management, you know, in the funding systems and in the way GPs are funding are funded. It takes away from the personal experience and puts the government in the way in the consultation room, basically between the doctor and the patient.
Turkeys don't vote for Christmas, is I think the saying. So it's going to be hard to shift that part of the operation, isn't it? Because it's very ingrained. I take it the salaries are probably quite good, and there's been a lot of make work going on. Can you see that?
Yep. According to some of those articles, there's been like an addition of 2,500 back office jobs in the last few years. So, I mean, perhaps it's not bad if they all disappear again. You know, it just sort of feels like there's a whole, you know, layers and layers of bureaucracy, as we've said.
What do you think about centralization as opposed to local health delivery? Because we're hearing a lot now that local works way better in the end. I don't know if that applies to health. But to centralize it into one sort of monolith, does that make sense to you guys?
Well, no, I personally think that local people will have much more idea of what's going to work locally. I mean, each community's different, got different needs, different wants. And, you know, the fewer layers between the funding and the decision maker, the better. You know, you don't want to have to go through Wellington to get the decisions made.
But I think the bureaucracy is the problem. It's whether the bureaucracy is central or local. We don't want to duplicate a whole lot of bureaucracy, getting more tick boxes. So it depends. Again, it depends on the framework. So if the framework is that, well, we want to actually provide healthcare, or we think these things should be done by GPs or by hospital doctors and nurses, and I'm sure it's exactly the same in the hospital with the paperwork that's required. I think the more important question is actually the provision of healthcare.
After all, it is the health system. Well, just that little part of the name that gives it away.
Yeah.
What do you hear from the front line? I'm thinking EDs. Obviously, you're well aware of what GPs are dealing with. But what sort of feedback do you get? Where is morale? Things like that.
No, pretty low, I would say. They're overworked. You know, the emergency department is huge, long waits. People waiting hours, days, almost even in some cases, to be seen or to get, you know, through the whole system and either discharged home or onto a ward. You know, and I mean, that's as a clinician, as a staff member, that's really, you know, that weighs on you if you know that you've got three or four people that are waiting and they're stuck there and you've done as much as you can, but you can't do the next thing because they haven't had their x-ray or you're still waiting for the blood test. And, you know, then it sort of burdens on the clinician as well as the patient that's there. And then, you know, everyone just gets overworked, stressed out. I mean, Lester Levy, one of his comments was he wanted more compassion in the system. Well, if you want the staff to be compassionate, they have to be well and healthy themselves. And when they're stressed to the max, and I mean, I think a lot of them are stressed beyond the max now, you know, you can't expect them to be caring you can't expect them to be caring and compassionate if they are burnt out themselves. You know, that's one of the first things that goes, is you just see every patient then as an annoyance, as something in the way, something that's stopping you from getting home. That's not the way you want to treat your patients. You want to actually care about them. And I think most medical and nursing people and midwives go into the professions because they do actually care. But that gets sort of worn out of you when you're constantly overworked, constantly understaffed. You know, and then the patients are stressed out, so they're behaving badly and stressing the staff out more. And, oh, dear,
I have had some good reports, though, of the staff trying to do their best in a difficult situation and showing professionality in dealing with patients. So I do think for most of the staff, they are trying to do a good job in a difficult situation. I mean, it's a difficult situation working in ED anyway. It's not easy. And, you know, the more bureaucratic layers there are, the harder it is. So I do take my hat off to doctors who are doing shift work in that sort of situation, and nurses, of course.
Can I mention the elephant in the room again? The demand on our health system kind of feels like to me that it's you know, gone on turbo recently. And there's probably a reason for that. And it's all right to talk about compassion in the health system, but a lot of compassion has been lacking. And it's kind of a problem, or more of a problem, that we've, using the royal we've brought on ourselves. Do we need to talk about, you know what I'm alluding to, do we need to talk about that as well if we're going to have a conversation about our health system right now? It does seem to be under exceptional strain, and we've had an event recently that could have significantly contributed to that strain.
Well, yes, I think we do need to ask those questions. You know, I think we need to ask, are there less staff? And if so, are there less staff? And are there more Kiwis getting sick? And if so, what are the reasons for that? And, you know, I think there's increasing evidence that the response to COVID has put a massive burden on the health system. And, you know, we need to ask the questions that the interventions that we used to try and prevent COVID, did they actually do that, or did they make the population sicker? And those are the questions we've been trying to ask for a very long time.
And not getting answers, right? No answers yet.
Not getting satisfactory answers, no. No, I mean, I sort of see three potential things: that you've got staff that were mandated out, so you've got fewer staff, you know, and a number of them have gone back. But, I, I don't know that anyone's quantified how many people were actually, you know, dismissed from the health system. Then you've got people getting, you know, staff members getting sick from adverse reactions. And then you've got the patients, an increased number of patients with, you know, potential adverse reactions. But again, you know, unless you can actually look at the individual clinical notes, look at what's going on, count them all up, you know, it's hard to put numbers on it. And it's impossible to get hold of that sort of data. I mean, presumably someone in the health system has got it, but for those of us outside and not in academia, it's not possible to get hold of that sort of data.
Would you, as NZDSOS, expect to be consulted anywhere along the line here? You probably don't expect it, but you should be, right?
I think we are a voice that needs to be heard. There are, you know, we have a substantial number of supporters and people who are asking the same questions as we are. And to just ignore us as irrelevant is probably part of the reason why the health system is failing.
Well, and, you know, we've got probably a disproportionately large number of integrative doctors who see health and see the way forward in a different way. And, you know, normally we're viewed as fringe and sort of on
not
the margins,
us.
But I mean,
not
the
by
thing
us.
Is,
don't worry, not by
well,
us.
Well, no, but by the bigger bureaucracy. I mean, I have over the years prior to COVID, when there's been opportunities to go and speak to the bureaucrats or speak to the managers about what's happening on the front line as a GP, what would GPs like? It's been a waste of time. You know, you go, I mean, there was one event in Hawke's Bay called the Big Listen.
Oh.
So I thought, oh, great, they're gonna listen. Well, I mean, it was the big talk. They did right. All the talking and they weren't interested. They're just not interested and I mean that when I read the New Zealand Doctor magazine, that's the feeling I get, is that GPs actually doing the work on the front line, their voices, you know, whether they're integrative or whether they're just doing day-to-day general practice, their voices don't get heard, their voices don't matter, the bureaucracy's not interested in what the actual doctors are doing. And, you know, to me, those are the people that we should be hearing from.
Rob Campbell said in the chat we had just before this chat that the budget is inadequate. What are your thoughts on just throwing more money at the problem? Does that solve it, do you think? Is that an element?
I think that is, you know, if we just put more money into the same solutions that haven't been working without looking at where things can be done better, I can't see it working.
Well, yes, I mean, it's an endless pit. You can, you know, if you do all the hip replacements that have sort of already been waiting 6 months, well, then you've got all the hip replacements that have been waiting 3 months and all the new hip replacements to do. You know, it's a never-ending pit unless we actually improve the population's health. So, yes, I think we need to do it completely differently.
We could have done with the $116 million we gave to Ukraine, maybe.
Well, I mean, and the vast amount that was wasted on COVID. I mean, I can't remember exactly what, but, you know, they're ditching. I mean, they're paying to get rid of all the expired PPE and the expired RAT tests. Well, I mean, what a waste of money buying them in the first place and then paying to get rid of them. I mean, that was such a wasteful lot of money over the last few years.
And just to finish up, staying with figures, I think Lester Levy has been kind of tasked with trying to squeeze $1.4 billion of unnecessary costs out of the system. Do you think that's possible? It's a lot of money. Do you think it's possible?
I don't know.
There could only be layers of management gone or bureaucracy, surely. You can't cut at the front line, can you?
Well, no, you can't. I mean, the front line is already pretty scrappy. And I mean, the fewer people that are left, the harder it is going to be on those people. And so they're more likely to leave. I mean, I don't understand enough about exactly where the money goes, who counts it. It sounds like, you know, there's an awful lot of secrecy around it. It sounds like maybe the minister wasn't given the full information. He's reassured, yeah, we're on track. And then suddenly you read in the paper, well, no, we're not on track. There's great big polls. I mean, I don't even have confidence that they really know where it all is and where it's all going and what's happening with it.
And perhaps, as Alison said, if we look at clinicians being in charge, if you like, rather than a board of business people, you know, maybe we'll get to the point where the money is used more directly for health.
It's a bit of a mess, isn't it? Bit of a dog's breakfast.
Yes, I'd agree with that.
Sounds like to me, and what do I know, but it's what it sounds like, with no easy, quick fix.
I think the fix has to come from the people, from Kiwis who take responsibility for their own health and for healthcare workers who are encouraged to actually provide healthcare.
Mm. Yeah. Any final words before we end this chat, and we can all go away and scratch our heads and try and make something of it?
Well, no, I mean, I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens. Certainly a big shake-up is needed, and, you know, hopefully it'll allow the whole system to change tack. But, yes, I think people ought to be sort of thinking about doing as much health creation in their own lives as possible and wanting to rely less on the system.
My words to Dr. Retio is let doctors be doctors.
Excellent.
That's a good slogan. Let doctors be doctors.
Yes, that's right. Let's get the government out of the consultation room.
We'll tow it behind the plane we use to say mainstream media is dead. RIP. Let doctors be doctors. So many people have lost the plot. They just don't even know what they're supposed to be doing anymore. They got no.
Yeah.
They're not anchored in any sort of reality anymore, is my feeling.
Well, I think that's a really good point. Mm. The people in those 14 layers of bureaucracy are just not anchored in reality. They're just anchored in this tick-boxing exercise.
Well, yes, and it just makes everything sort of stagnant. Nobody can do anything because you're mired in it. You can't make a decision because somebody higher up's going to jump on you, so you've got to pass it up the chain, and then that takes forever, and, you know, and nothing ever gets done because there's too many cooks spoiling the broth.
Yeah.
Thank you, Cindy De Villiers and Alison Goodwin from NZDSOS. Always great to speak to you guys, and we'll chat again. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Paul.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.